Hi, my name is Govind Jayaraman, and this is Paper Napkin Wisdom. On today's episode, we have Sunny Vu. Sunny is the founder of the award-winning Misfit Wearables, who design highly wearable computing products. In addition, he's founder and former CEO of Agometrics, makers of the world's first iPhone-connected hardware medical device. He is at the center of disruptive technology in now two verticals. Incredible person. Incredible entrepreneur. I know you're going to love my conversation with Sunny Vu. Sunny, welcome to Paper Napkin Wisdom. I'm thrilled you joined me here today.
Oh, I'm honored to be invited.
So, Sunny, you shared a really interesting paper napkin with me, and it really speaks to actually one of the lessons I learned from hearing you speak. So I'm looking forward to you sharing it with the audience. Can I have you read it out loud, please?
Absolutely. It just says, only work with people you like.
Okay, so why did you share that with me?
You know, it was one of those things where when I first heard it, it sounded good. But then shortly afterwards, I just felt it was not really realistic, you know? And it wasn't until after I talked about it with the person who told me this that I really kind of started to believe it. And after it wasn't until after I kind of reflected on my collective experience over the last three startups where it really made sense. You know, this was a bit from John Sculley, former CEO of Apple and Pepsi. That's where it all came from.
And I think that's amazing because it does feel completely unrealistic. But what was the point at which when John shared that with you that it started to connect and sort of seemed like it made sense?
Well, you know, at first I thought, well, it didn't seem realistic because because my thought was, well, you're John Sculley. You can work with anyone you want. So you can live this out. It's not a problem because everyone's, you know, just lots of people would want to work with you. But I still got to hustle. You know, I'm still early in my career. And while that might still be true to some extent, I realized over time that life really is too short to have to put up with something like this, to have to put up with working with people that I don't like. And I guess the real controversy is this really applicable if you're really, really early in your career? And I don't know. I feel in my gut that it is applicable because we almost always have choices. I think we always have choices.
And you know, part of the reason why we're entrepreneurs is that we're making that choice, right? We're making that choice to build an organization. We're building a company. We're building a brand. We're building, in your case, you design, you know, industry-changing products. That's a choice. But yet this choice seems like something is much more elusive. You know, it's people choice, right?
Hello? Say again? Sorry, you blipped out for a second.
Oh, sorry. So what I said was, you know, as entrepreneurs, we always feel like everything we have is a choice, that we can, you know, we start our own companies, and in your case, you started products that in many cases has sort of shifted an industry a little bit. You know, that's a big choice. But for some reason, when it comes to people, we don't feel like we've got a choice sometimes as entrepreneurs, right? We sort of feel like we've got to deal with the cards we've got.
Yeah, and it does feel like that. But it's precisely because we're entrepreneurs that I believe we have even more choices, you know, because you can create your own world. And while it doesn't always seem obvious because it's like, well, sometimes beggars can't be choosers because oftentimes as entrepreneurs, our main role is to be salesmen, to convince investors to give us money when we're really risky. To convince customers to buy a product that doesn't exist yet, it will exist soon, or to convince people to come work with us when they're going to take a pay cut and it's going to be a much less stable job situation. You know, the list goes on. But ultimately, we do have that choice, that selection, that ability to select. And we always have I've just found so many times in life doing these startups that it always feels like we don't have choices, whether it's to work with people we like or not, or to go down one path or not. But I don't know what it is. I feel like when we step back and test our assumptions, another path always seems to light up.
Yeah, and I wonder if there's something, you know, a little deeper as well with this, Sonny. Like, when you say with only work with people you like, there's this sort of gut check about them as people, right? And whether or not they're aligned with you. And your gut sometimes tells us, you know, entrepreneurs, we're always trusting our gut, but sometimes we dismiss that with people. You know, we let resumes talk us into things. We let people talk us into things sometimes. Yeah. And is this like a little bit of a gut check, you know, trust your gut when it comes to people?
You know, there is a gut thing, but sometimes, you know, first impressions are not always the best judges of people, I think. You know, I think that first impressions can be overrated, not always. And so I do believe giving people benefit of the doubt and second chances and whatnot. I do believe in that. But at the end of the day, you know, if I had to choose, you know, someone's delivering on their numbers, but I don't really like them or they don't align with my values, versus a person who doesn't deliver, but does align, you know, what do you do? And this is something I learned from reading Jack Welch's book. You know, that's what he talks about people who don't meet the numbers, but align with you. You invest in them and train and help. Hopefully they will. And if they don't, we'll deliver. And if they don't, then you help them find a better place. But for folks who do deliver, but don't align with you culturally or value wise, the surprising suggestion that he had was to actively seek them out and dismiss them. And I thought that was just so radical, but it's so true over the years. The reason that's stated is that those are the folks who are going to be the most, who become the most influential in your company and will be most likely to damage the culture of your company.
Yeah, because people will model their behavior because they're so high performing.
Yeah, they're high performing, and people think it's going to be okay to be a jerk or to be okay to be arrogant. And it is never okay to be a jerk or arrogant. And so then you have to kind of undo that damage, and you have to kind of explain why to that many more people. So it's really true. And it kind of, and I, if I trace it back, it's like the one test could be, well, do I like this person or not? You know, do I want to hang out with this person or not? And if I say no, I'm like, well, why is that? You know, and often it comes back to issues around ego or lack of openness, things like that.
Yeah, I think it's a really powerful thing. And, you know, it sort of leads me to, I think, one of the most powerful takeaways when I heard you speak at MIT's Endicott House for the Entrepreneurial Master's Program. You said something when people said, you know, what scares you about competition? And you said, well, teams, the people. It was the people that were involved in the competitors that was something that you paid attention to. And that sort of speaks to this, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're up against a big team with lots of resources, but there are political issues, people can't get along, they don't like each other, no problem. Like, you're going to run circles around folks like that, and they're going to be an embarrassment to themselves. But if you are up against a fast, agile, hardworking, highly functional team that likes each other, that trusts each other to watch each other's back, you better watch out, man.
That's
a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and it's such a simple concept, and it all comes back to this, right? That these people like each other and are willing to go that extra mile for each other, as opposed to that other group, you know, they're as happy to sabotage each other as do anything else, and the lack of alignment will pull them apart in time.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's definitely true. I think. It's that or worse, it won't pull them apart, and they will just actively sabotage each other, or they won't really help each other, and they'll be conflicting, and they'll be pulling apart. Because sometimes, you know, things like these inefficiencies can hide themselves in really well-resourced organizations. And that's why we have politics, you know? That's why we have, I mean, is politics unavoidable? I don't know. Probably, maybe, but I dream of a future that we can have a big company, a company that is fast, agile, and is really aligned culturally.
Well, I mean, when you've built companies that grew rapidly and added people quickly and stayed nimble and agile, was this notion around surrounding yourself with people you like and working with people you like something that you were intentional about throughout that entire process, or was it sometimes you just had to surrender to what was going on around you? Because
well, you know, the first two companies, I did not figure this out. It wasn't really until the third company and my early conversations with John where this really challenged my thinking. You know, my first company, we hired a bunch of really smart people, high IQ, and you know what? We had a bunch of social problems, lots of egos, lots of communication issues, all sorts of misunderstandings. Horrible. My second company hired a bunch of people, hired a bunch of people with lots of experience. And I realized, well, that wasn't necessarily always all that great. Sometimes it paid out. It was great. But oftentimes we met people not with 20 years of experience, but 1 year of experience, 20 times, as they say. Mm-hmm. And, the closedness of minds really kind of hampered progress in communication, to be honest. And that wasn't fun either. So I learned over the years that it wasn't about IQ, it's about skills, relevant skills. It wasn't about experience, it was about wisdom. And now these things are correlated, skills and intelligence, wisdom and experience, but not always. So let's just look for what we're actually needing. And if I had to summarize it, and then alignment was huge. The difficulty with living this out, this whole only work with people you like, only work with people who really aligned with, who align culturally. And I'm not talking about like ethnic cultures. I'm talking about, you know, company values.
Yeah, company culture.
Exactly. One of the things I learned around that was the difficulty comes when you do find that high performing person, especially in a role that you really need them to, you really need performance in. When the company's desperate for sales and you have a star salesperson, or the company's desperate for great design and you have an amazing designer, is to have the courage to let that person go, even especially when they're delivering. And that's been a tough lesson, to be honest. We've had to do that a couple times. And it just was not pleasant, you know. The resounding, you know, you hear in stereo from even the people who agree with you that, well, how is the company ever going to exist if we don't have that person? How are we going to do X if that person's gone? And the short answer, really, each time was, if you have an answer like, oh, well, we'll just do this, 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 then that's easy. But if you don't have an answer, I mean, it was often the times when we didn't have an answer, and I just had to say, well, I don't know, but we don't have a choice. We are not going to work with people like this, you know? And, well, why don't we just keep them until past this deadline, and then we'll let that person go. Not good enough, you know, not good enough either. Yeah, I think you just really have to take this seriously. Like, if you take this really seriously, it actually is a pretty radical, can be a pretty radical transformation.
Yeah, and I completely agree with it. We do the Jack Welch performance values quadrant thing in the company, and we look at it quarterly and trust what we do there, and we're very binary about it, and it's really changed us. And I think that for me, I can be honest and say that the times that we've had real problems, they would have been predictable if we really had each other's back, and we didn't have each other's back in those situations. Mm-hmm. So did you have those stark realizations? Because you were uncompromising about it later on, and laid down the law and said, you know, we have to make these choices. Did you learn by falling down?
I had to learn it the hard way. You know, we had folks that I just kind of put up with, you know, in previous companies, time and time and time again. And I just realized, aside from just sheer personal misery, it doesn't actually result in eventual enormous increases in productivity. Because what ended up happening was relationships would be damaged, communication lines would be damaged, things like that, where that person could get, you know, a lot done, but we, if I had a ring, you know, put a circle around a group of people, did not get a lot done. And so in the end, it actually didn't work anyway. You know, the benefit was not worth it.
And you spend so much leadership energy managing this person and the damage they're doing, truly.
Yeah, and a lot of it is intangible, like emotional and kind of types of damage to team, the fabric of the team, you know. And so you gotta be really careful with that, you know. And like I said, as an entrepreneur, you have these choices, you know. If you're the founder, you can make these choices. And I think one needs to try to show up the courage to make these tough choices.
Yeah, and
especially early on.
Yeah. What happened in the team dynamic when you stood up for values, when you stood up for alignment? What happened to those that were really deeply aligned with you in those situations?
I think they were energized. They said, okay, I get it. Like, we get it. Yes. You know, they're like, okay, well, man, it's going to be tough, but it galvanized the team, you know? It really galvanized the team. I mean, we were fearful, but, you know, as another one of my mentors said, you can't show courage unless you're afraid.
Yeah. I like to say courage shows up when we show up. You know, the thing that I love what you said about your team got fired up. They're always watching you, aren't they? You know, they're always looking for the other shoe to drop, for the fly in the ointment, for the time when we're not leaders. There's never a moment off from that, is there? We can't let one get by us.
No, I mean if you're gonna suggest principles and values, you know, I think you better live by them pretty uncompromisingly. Now, the thing is, this doesn't mean like everything's black and white in the world, you know. Like, you know, on Myers-Briggs, I'm a pretty strong P, and as you know, that means perceptive, which means, you know, I see the world in a lot of gray, in many shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still true. And so that's why second chances are fine, you know, and benefit of the doubt, very important to give. But, you know, at some point, you have to draw the line as well.
Yeah, I mean, that resonates with me, because where would I be without second chances? And I know I wouldn't be very far. You know, one of the things that you said that was really neat too, Sonny, I want to go back and explore this for just a second, is you talked about 20 years of experience before 20 time versus 20 times 1 year experience.
Mm.
And you said that really quickly, but I think it's an interesting perspective. What did you mean by that?
I meant the ability. I was really referring to the ability to learn and to grow, and a heart that's open to new ideas. Because in some ways, if you think about it, experience is just about bias. You know, it basically says I can make a decision very quickly because I've made the same decision many times before. And so what that means is that they just think less. They just think a little bit faster, you know, given certain situations. But that may not be good, because assumptions and contexts may change. And in fact, by definition, if you're in a startup, the assumptions and contexts are exactly what you're trying to change. Because, you know, who are you to, you know, kind of, you know, walk into an industry and try to disrupt it, or walk into a business situation and try to disrupt it. And so that's part of, and so there's a balance that's needed. So the person who has 1 year of experience 20 times is someone who is not learning after those 20 years. You know, they're making the same mistakes again and again and again. The person with 20 years of wisdom is someone who has made lots of mistakes and learned from them and grew from them and is wisened to things and not just automatically making decisions.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point that you talk about. You know, the 20-year person has made lots of mistakes, lots of different mistakes, versus the 20 times 1 year, they're making the same mistakes over and over. So the quantity of mistakes is actually smaller. So we can even say that about success, that the more mistakes you have, some people think that when you go and more successful, you fail less and less, but it's actually the other way around. When you get more and more successful, you fail things more and quicker and faster.
Yeah, well, I mean, no one wants to fail, and one should not try to fail. we should try to succeed. You know, there's no doubt about that. However, failure is inevitable, and some of the greatest successes, you know, the story about Michael Jordan, about how many games he lost and how many missed shots he's had, right? We always learn way more from our failures than our successes.
Yeah, that's powerful. And Sonny, I want to thank you for joining me here today. I learned an awful lot from you, and I'm sure the audience got a lot. Hopefully I can bring you back. What do you think?
Absolutely. This was a lot of fun. What a great idea.
Thanks so much, Sonny.
Thanks.
What an amazing conversation with Sonny. Thank you for that. You know, this notion of working only with people you like does sound like it's something that you can only do once you have achieved a certain level of success, but it's not true. In fact, it's very realistic to start your business that way. It's very realistic to do this at any given point. It doesn't matter how much momentum we have going in a certain way in our business, we can realign our business. And we've heard that story before. We've heard that story from Brian Scudamore at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, how he realigned his business. The story of John DeHart with Nurse Next Door, also when he realigned his business around his core values and working with the people that he liked. When we step back and test our assumptions, another path always seems to light up. That was something that Sonny said that really resonated with me. And I love this notion about teams. I love this notion about teams. It was a thing that really struck me, that teams in other companies, teams in his competitors, highly performing teams, teams where people have each other's back, that's what concerns him about a competitive landscape. He knows that he can beat the slow-moving juggernaut of a company if they don't have a team that has each other's back, a team that likes each other, a team that's hardworking and highly functional. Work with who you like. Simple concept. I'd love to hear what you think about it. Please feel free to join the dialogue. Tweet at WiseNapkin. Also, you can follow along on Facebook or comment in the comment section of the blog on papernapkinwisdom.com. I'd love to hear from you. My name is Govind Jayaraman. This was Paper Napkin Wisdom. Thanks for listening, and make it a great day.